when I was recently down at my church, Vince Mock turned next to me and he said, "You know, if she could preach at all, we'd have taken her over you." When I was in grade school, several times a year, my brother and I would take the trip from Bayside up in Humboldt County, where my mother's family lived, to Los Altos, where my father's family lived. And my brother and I would get on the bus and travel together the whole time. We'd get put on the bus, that's what we called it in those days, in Eureka, and we were met at the bus station in San Francisco, which was starting to be torn down last week. Humboldt County is very rural, and the only real city in the county then and now was Eureka, and it was to us a big city. It had probably 25,000 people at most. San Francisco had probably 10 or 15 times that many people in those days, and the tallest building in Eureka, I think, was 6 or 7 stories, depending on whether you counted the little air conditioning shed on the top. And the tallest building in San Francisco was so tall that I could not see the top of the building when I stood near it, because looking up that far with my head turned back made me dizzy and I lost my balance. As far as I was concerned, San Francisco, with all of its cosmopolitan excitement, was about as far away from Bayside as if it were on a different continent. And we made that bus ride depending on how many stops we made along the way in those dozens of little towns that line Highway 101. It never took less than about 12 hours. Sometimes it would take an entire day. But for a kid, it was like being on a trip that took a long time. But it wasn't ever boring. It turned out to be a time when I could read, which I love to do, or I could look out the window at all the countryside that was passing by and let my imagination run wild. Or I could sometimes just think things through. I loved thinking things through. The time on the trip was long, of course, but I knew every stop, and I looked forward to every one that we made along the way. The driver had to stop for regular breaks, and so we stopped at coffee shops and places like that regularly, and every one of them, when you went to the checkout counter, had these novelties for sale in a glass case underneath the cash register and on the shelves behind it. So I looked forward to saving up my money for each of those trips so I could get things along the way. But one of the things I looked forward to the most, and this will tell you where I come from, was when we hit Ukiah for lunch or dinner, because the bus station cafeteria had the best chicken noodle soup that I have ever had in my entire life. And I remember it vividly. There were these huge, wide, chunky noodles, these big, flaky pieces of pulled chicken. And I had never tasted soup like that before, and I'm not sure with that memory I ever will again. For me, that bus ride wasn't a trip. It wasn't about getting there. It was an adventure. And I was a traveler. I was someone who got out of Humboldt County by making a big trek. So in my mind, making that journey with so much of a sense of independence made me feel like I was someone who had seen a little bit of the world. Those bus rides were true journeys, and I still remember them that way. The last time that Gretchen and I went to visit my brother and his family in London, it took less time to get there than it used to take my brother and I to get by bus from Bayside to San Francisco. Airplane flights, even those to another continent, are never really long enough to be journeys in any real sense of the word. So unless it's maybe your first time flying, or if maybe you get anxious on airplane flights, you probably only remember an airplane trip if something went wrong, if you lost your luggage, if you got stuck for hours on the tarmac. An airplane trip is all about how fast it takes to get there, not about what happens along the way. But if you were to drive across country, like families used to do, or take a cruise, as some of you are doing this summer, you would see how much land and sea there is between the place where you're beginning and the place to which you're going. You would get a sense of how big the world really is. And you would also get a sense of how many different kinds of people there are when you're on a journey. So a trip becomes a journey when it includes these two things: the passage of a significant amount of time and an awareness of the journey on which you are traveling, and both are critical. The passage of time means something happens other than just getting there. And then what happens along the way becomes a part, a narrative part even, of the journey. So an awareness of the journey means that you know how you got there, and it means that you saw something of what lies in between. Webster's Unabridged says that a journey is to travel from one place to another, usually taking a long time, or similarly, a passage or a progression from one state of life to another. So the idea of a journey is a common theme in stories of the people of faith. Much of the Hebrew Bible tells stories of the people of faith as they wandered from place to place, occasionally setting down for a while and then pulling up stakes and continuing on to a new place. In the Exodus story, for instance, the ancient Israelites walked for 40 years before they got to that particular journey's end. But along the way, the people always had a relationship with God, and God was always leading them. So when Moses led the Israelites in the Exodus story, he talked to God every day, it says, and he told the people what God was saying to them. And I find it interesting that Moses also reported to God all that the people were saying about God. Sometimes they were joyful and grateful. Other times they did an awful lot of grumbling and complaining. And one of the reasons I like that story is because it sounds a lot like my life. It is very joyful on some days, but there are very many other days when I do plenty of grumbling and complaining myself. I think it's no accident that journey is sort of the defining metaphor for our lives as people of faith. In the biblical Hebrew, there's this word called derech, and it means a road, and it means a path, and it means a journey, and it means even a way of life, and it means them all at the same time. You don't choose among meanings in Hebrew. They're all rolled together. That's one of the wonderful things about the language. So with derech, which is just our life's journey, there's no road without an understanding of going down it or not going down it. So in Hebrew, a journey is both an actuality and a possibility all at the same time. It always takes place upon some sort of path or a road on the ground or even just a cleared way to walk. But a journey always leads to some place. So it also always represents a destination at the same time. And in the ancient world, the road of one village connected ultimately to every other road and every other village in town. So journey was also a symbol of the connectedness of people, despite their seeming isolation. So journeying with God's Spirit alongside us will always lead each of us as people of faith into a richer and a deeper life of the Spirit. And the journey of a particular community of faith shares that same richness. But with each community, as with each one of us inside a community, there are differing places and differing ways to go along our journey. Not all paths are going to take us through the same countryside. The paths that we at MPC have taken over the years are not always the same as the paths of other faith communities, and at times they haven't been the same as other Presbyterian communities either. That's part of why we have debates in the larger church. There will always be a variety of paths that we can take throughout life. Sometimes those paths are going to lead to dead ends after a while, and we're going to have to turn around and try to find a right path again. Some paths, we discover, may turn out to be circular, and then we have to start to search around in order to find a way forward. And some paths are going to lead us to places where other people have not gone before. And so they will turn out to be trailblazing paths upon which others will follow our lead. And I think we at MPC are on that latter kind of path. But it might not look so familiar to us today because we haven't yet been where it's going to take us. It's kind of like sailing on a river that we have not yet explored. We don't know what lies beyond the next bend. But as intrepid journeyers, not knowing doesn't stop us. We still feel compelled to sail our boat at least around the next bend in order to see what mysteries will unfold when we get there. Robert Frost, in his wonderful poem, The Road Less Traveled, said, "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry that I could not travel both and still be one traveler, I looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, and then I took the other as just as fair and having perhaps a better claim because it was grassy and wanted somewhere, though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference." I think that as we continue to say goodbye in our hearts to our pastor and begin to wonder what happens next, we are faced with two primary tasks as a community of faith. The first one, I think, is this. We want to become aware again of the fact that we have always been on a journey, both as individuals and as a community. We have always been sailing our boat along an unfamiliar river, rarely knowing what lies beyond the next bend. And Karen pastored us along our journey for actually a fairly long time, as these things go, and Duke, of course, even much longer. But in both cases, it was always going to be for a time, never for all time. Those of us here are the boat. We are the travelers, and our pastor was only ever a co-traveler on a journey that intersected with ours for a while, but ultimately would lead her on another tributary of that same river as we here continue to travel together. Maybe I think it's like a little bit the family relationships between parents and children. As parents, if we were parents, or as children, as we all once were, we knew that whether we got along well or not with our family, whether we loved being together or not, we would never live together forever, only for a season. And for most of us, that season began changing when we or our children became about college age or young adulthood. And when that happened, a new season began. I didn't want to be at home anymore, so when I left home after high school, I never looked back. And I also know from talking to some of you parents that even though the transition of children leaving home was hard in some ways, it also opened up new possibilities in life that never would have been present if you'd all stayed together. It turns out to be one of those guilty secrets of the empty nesters. A part of our heart is delighted that our children have fledged, even though there are some days, perhaps even many days, when we miss the time that they were young children. Another one of my favorite poets is T.S. Eliot. In his poem, Four Quartets, he said, "To make an end is to make a beginning, because the end is where we always start from." So today we stand at the end of something very meaningful, but we also stand at the beginning of something very meaningful as well. And if Eliot is right, as I believe he is, then one of the most important aspects of any journey is an understanding that the ends don't justify the means. It's not about the getting there. It's about the how we get there. We may make many different paths to get to any particular place, but how we do that, how we make that journey, is what ultimately is critically important. And that's why I think an awareness of being on a journey is our first task to embrace beginning today. We must work to be aware of how we make our way and how we take our next steps together. It will make a very big difference in our life as a community if we can focus on the how of taking those steps before we begin to try to focus on the where. So if we are willing to take the road less traveled by, as I suspect we are here at MPC, I wonder what that journey might look like. As people of faith, I think we could ask something like the same question by saying this: what is it that God requires of us as a community? What would God have us do on this journey? And that question has been asked by people of faith for thousands and thousands of years, over hundreds and hundreds of generations. It's not unique to us today. And the answers, in one form or another, often get said in similar sorts of ways to that answer that we heard today from Deuteronomy. What God wants us to do is to understand God as the source of all life and the source of all that is good and holy, to journey in God's ways, loving God and serving our fellow human beings with all of our hearts and with all of our souls. The prophet Micah said it this way: God has already told us what God would have us do, to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. As people of faith, this is always our task, no matter which bend of the river we're rounding next, no matter which road we're walking on at any moment. As most of you know, and I just said at the beginning of the service, I'm nearing the end of one big step of my own long journey of re-entering the ministry after a long secular career intervening. Even though my church home is here at MPC, most of my family and friends over the years have not been churchgoers. The truth, as Karen once said to me at the beginning of my process, is that being a minister is not what it used to be. Not only does the profession not really have the status that it once did, but in an increasingly secularized society, a lot of people today think going into the ministry is a very odd thing for a person to be doing. They just can't imagine why someone would do that. I have to confess, I have thought the same thing myself many, many times. So, as a minister, I am often asked the question, why would a person go to church? More to the point, I think most of those people are asking, what reason would compel a person to want to become a member of a church? The answer, I usually say, is not going to be found in any compelling theological arguments, even though I spent several years studying them. It's certainly not going to be found by telling people what it is that we think they should be doing or how we think they should live. And I'm absolutely sure it's not going to come by scaring people into some sort of a faith with a threat of some kind of a hell. We humans are very able to create our own hell right here on earth. We don't need to invoke anything beyond that to be scared to death. But at the same time, the answer is most certainly not going to come by thinking that we people of faith are somehow better or more spiritually attuned than anyone else either. But I got to thinking, on the other hand, the answer to why a person might want to become a part of a church community could well come when an inquiring person sees the work of a community of faith like ours, both its work in the world and its work in caring for its own people, and a person asking the question of why would a person want to join a church might discover, if they were visiting, say, our celebration service, that they have an inward sense, maybe a feeling sense, that they might want to become a part of this particular community of faith. And I think a person coming to our celebration would want to take such a step if he or she would be able to see and feel for themselves in being here that we call ourselves the people of God because of the love that we show for everybody around us. And then I think that person may well want to get into our boat with us and journey for a while. I'll tell you something that I've learned that has been very hard for me to face. In talking to many people who have experienced alienation from the churches that they attended, the one thing they all seem to have in common is that in their church experience, they felt not so much the love of Christians, but the judgment of Christians in one form or another. And the thing of it is, this problem is not only that of the religious right, it's also a problem of the religious left. I have worked in both conservative and liberal churches, and I've noticed that neither one of them seems to think that they themselves might come across in any way as judgmental or exclusive. And yet, that is not what people report at all. depending on who you are, depending on where you come from, you may well not feel welcomed at any given church at any time. So as we journey together as a church, we have to listen to the widespread complaint that many people of faith seem to be better at telling other people what they are doing wrong than they are at demonstrating the love that God has given to them and has for the rest of the world. Regardless of how well we may have done that or not, we can take this transition time, this moment in our history, to become aware once again of what this journey is all about. Not just in the exploration of our own spirituality and faith, but also in our appearance to the world around us. And if our journey's goal, personally and communally, is one of intentionally showing all of the people around us the love that God has for them, we will never go far wrong in embracing the spiritual work of our community here at MPC, because we will make a difference in the world if the love that undergirds all of our work here shines forth in everything that we do and to everybody that we meet. And also, I think, as we begin this next phase of our life journey together, it's helpful to remind ourselves that since we are on a journey, we are going to go through many adventures and some misadventures. We will experience a few breakdowns, and we will experience many breakthroughs. At times, we will face sorrow or loss, but the rest of the time can be filled with great joy. It's the nature of journeying. And our first new adventure together will begin very soon when we have an interim pastor on board, as it were. And that person, if you don't know, will be somebody like a bar pilot, steering our boat safely out and around as we explore what we want in a new permanent pastor, and then steering us safely back into port, where we will once again choose a pastor to journey with us, knowing then, as we know well today, that the word permanent is never really fully accurate in describing a pastor. In his poem Quartets, Eliot wrote an even more famous line than the one I wrote earlier. He said, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time." So today, we have arrived again at the same place that we started 12 years ago. And we know this place even better today than we did back then. Tomorrow, as we take the next step of our journey together, we will find, as we have in the past, as those ancient Israelites did 4,000 years ago, that the Holy Spirit is with us and has been with us the entire way, leading us, guiding us, and shepherding us to wherever we're going next. And that same Spirit of God will see us through until this journey's end. That's the promise that God made to those ancient Israelites. And that's why today we call ourselves children of the covenant, the children of God, or the people of the faith. Amen.